Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
Well, I'm not going to take this part out. Everyone, I've decided to do the introduction today. Welcome to the show, Spark Your Fire. I have never done the introduction, David, before, so maybe you can take on from here because I don't recall exactly.
Hey, so simple. All right, well, okay, I'll kick off then.
Take it from the top, David.
Sorry about that. All right. G'day, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and with me today is Jazz Dana from our Melbourne office. How are you doing, Jazz?
Great, David. How are you, my friend?
Mate, I am very good. We have a sunny day today in Sydney. What's the weather like down there, mate?
Melbourne, it's sunny. Melbourne, it's always sunny.
Come on. No, that's not true. We all know that.
look, weather is a little less important. It's more important where the best guests come from. And that's always Melbourne. Even today's guest, one of the best ones, is from Melbourne, right?
All right. Well, I won't argue with you on that, but I'm surely we're going to have to kick up some of the we have to get some of the different guests on the show from Sydney as well. So challenge accepted. But today, more importantly, we have Jill McIntyre from Decide, Believe, Begin, Become. Jill, welcome back to the show again.
Delighted to be with you guys today. And yes, I'm a Melbourneite and it's supposed to be sunny. I must be looking out of a different window than what you are, Jazz, along the way.
Yeah. I don't know what you put on your window, but please. But thank you for coming back, Jill. I think, you know, your episode was there's been a lot of wisdom coming out of last episode. And, you know, after discussing with Jazz, we think it makes absolute sense to bring you back to share a bit more about, you know, JVs and your story. And I'm sure our listeners would love to hear from you again. So that's why we thought, you know, it's great to be able to have you back on the show. And I think last time we already got your introduction, so we'll skip the introduction this time. But, you know, there's a couple of topics that we want to talk about today, Jazz, is that right?
Yeah, surely. So, Jill, first of all, welcome to the show once again. David said, it was great to have you on the show last time. Listeners really enjoyed it. Some good feedback came through. There was something that we started discussing last time, Jill, and we did mention it on the podcast a little bit as well, which is a childcare site that you were working on back then in Frankston, from memory.
Yes, that's correct. In Frankston, South Jazz. It's on a 2,662 square metre site, 3 street frontage. From when I found it, I just couldn't leave the site alone. What could I do with it? Because it's in a green belt in between two busy roads, most people who were looking at it were very much along the thinking that they couldn't do anything with it. And, you know, walked away as investors from that point of view because you could only build on 25% of the site because it was within the Greenbelt restrictions. So the longer I looked at it and thought, what can I do under a general zoning? And first of all thought, what about if I looked into doing medical centre? And I did some research and there were too many medical centres in the area. Then I thought about what about an aged care? And you need roughly a minimum of 4,000 square metres for an aged care centre to move forward there. So the next one was a childcare. And I did, again, my research in the area. And, yes, it came up as in a positive way to go. Because we can only build on a quarter of the site, that means that there's going to be a lot of open space and there's going to be over and above what we're required for car parking, which is fabulous. And it will be for 84 children in a very green environment with gardens outside and plenty of room for the kids to play and explore.
Sure. First of all, remind us, when did this project got started? So how long we have been in the project for now and what's the current status of this?
Okay, so the time frames is I found the site round about June, which now, what are we? That's about 14 September. Months ago. 14 months ago, yep. And it took me about maybe 7 weeks, 6 or 7 weeks before I could decide on what the actual equation was for a childcare centre. Yes, we all know that with residential property, it's supply and demand, days on the market, who your market is, what's the trend in the market. We, you know, they're the indicators, and there's lots of them before I would go ahead with a residential site that I'd have to tick the box. But when looking at something like a childcare, it's a very different equation at all. Altogether, and it all goes down to the demand for an area in that area, where you've chosen to do your childcare centre, what the catchment numbers are, and it works on what the government rebate is by the number of children, by 50 weeks in the year. It's a very different equation that works out what the value of the business would be if you went ahead and purchased. So that was in about 14 months ago. When I worked out after about the 6 weeks what to do with it, it was then about another 7 weeks of negotiating, because I was wanting 12 months and 49 days with an additional 14 days due diligence to get as much done. I ended up with 6 months, 1% down, 5% at the end of the 59 days due diligence period, and got all of the things moving and working within that six-month period. Got in that period also an investor on board that came in as a financial partner for that, and settled virtually in January. So what are we now? We're round about the September. So that was, how long is that? 7 months ago.
Seven or eight months.
Yeah. And in that time had DA approval from the actual town planner at council. But because of the third street, there was a lot of objections. That then had to go to an objectors meeting that then went on to a council meeting. And at the council meeting, we got pipped at the post, and we lost at the council meeting, which overrode, of course, the town planner's original verdict. So at this point, as at yesterday, our application for VCAT was lodged. And to give you some idea on VCAT, it is August at the moment. And putting in to go to VCAT, we will probably get a hearing round about March of 2020. So it's quite a long wait for VCAT, but that's part of the process.
So March 2020. So
absolutely.
So more or less, the project will linger on for 2 years, and then after the March 2020 hearing, you guys will find out whether you can proceed with it or not, essentially.
Absolutely, because we've ticked all of the boxes that council required. There's never been any doubt there. It was a very emotional and political decision of the council because of the emotions in the room with the objectors, because basically they just, you know, don't have a lot of really solid things as to why we should be there at all, as against the growth of what could benefit from us being in Frankston and the children of Frankston. So, you know, this is part of the process that VCAT worked very much on a thinking of urbanomically what is a sound and a good growth part of the area. And so, yes, we're in the hands of VCAT, and we wait and see what happens in March of next year.
So when you originally bought the site, what sort of time frame you had in mind that, you know what, you'll have the approval and the project ready to go by, sort of what time frames?
Well, you know, first of all, there's a couple of points that I want to make. In this market that we're in at the moment, it was very much that when I found the site, I got in touch with the agent, and the agent said it was under contract. In this market, when money's tight, as you know, especially Jazz, in the area that you're focusing in, mm-hmm. with brokering and things like that, if I went back 3 years and I saw something under contract, I wouldn't even proceed with following it up. But in this market where money's tight, there's about 90% of offers that go in that are subject to finance. And of course, in that particular case, I left my name with the agent. The agent came back and, yes, went on and started negotiating from that point. So what I'm making here is very much that even if something is on, even if it is under contract, follow through and pursue it, because it could fall over. The chances of falling over are pretty high. So that's something that I think is important. Plus, the other point here is that when you go in and you're investing, you don't want to buy problem sites. And by problem sites, it could be the part of your site is in the flood zone area. If there's people in Queensland that are listening, you've got a high flood zone area in many, many parts of Queensland, for example. I would walk away. That's a problem site. With what I was looking at this site, because it was in the green belt and could only build on a quarter of it, all of the investors and developers that were looking at that site, it was a problem to them because they couldn't do anything other than build a residential house. You couldn't subdivide and you couldn't multi-drill because there was an overlay on that property. So it's about thinking, being creative in your thinking and thinking outside the square as to what you could do with the property rather than what you can't do with the property. Does that make sense with what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. It makes perfect sense for this market. And David and I have discussed this a few times as well. So that's perfect.
So when it's being rejected by the council, actually, first of all, for our listeners that's outside Victoria, what's VCAT?
Yep. VCAT is like the Land Environment Court in New South Wales. And when I was living in New South Wales, and I think it's called that in Queensland as well, and when I was living,
QCAT, I think it was,
something like that, And it's virtually a higher court to go to. It's the end of the line. Whatever VCAT hands down, like the Land and Environment Court, that's the end decision of what will happen. Yeah. So it's the higher one. And I think from memory, the guys that I was working with had a number of properties in Sydney. This is going back quite a while. It was a starting point of something like 30,000 to go to the Land Environment Court back then. It wasn't for the faint-hearted, but for the holding costs and for the time that it took the guys I was with to gain approval was ridiculous in holding costs with five properties that they were juggling at the time. So VCAT and Land Environment Court are really a higher place to go above council.
Yeah, okay. So that's kind of like a standard procedure. If you're not satisfied with a council ruling, then essentially the only place to appeal is to go to the Civil Administration Tribunal, which is VCAT, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, same thing. Yep, same thing.
So, Jill, with the delay in the project because of the objections, what about the cost blowouts? What sort of cost blowouts are you expecting in this case?
Well, at this stage, we don't know what it will cost them, because obviously part of what going to VCAT is that there's three parties. There's the council, because they've rejected it. There's the objectors, because they're part of the whole thing. And there's us. So, you know, at this stage, I can only envisage what we're doing and where we're going. What happens when you go to VCAT? You need someone that obviously has got town planning background. They can be a town planner. A very established town planner that's used to cross-examining and VCAT procedure, like a court hearing procedure, because they're anticipating that our VCAT application will take 4 days. So it is a proper court hearing environment. As to where or what representation the council will get or the objectors will get, you know, time will tell with that one at that stage. But the people that I've now, or we've now put together, are at a different level. I've also got my old town planner that I would back to the absolute hilt with all that I do, but it's not his area of expertise to go to VCAT. So I've shopped around and now got an advocate for VCAT that is very much into, he's a solicitor, but also he's got a town planning background that he can go and do all of these quality type things. Plus, the other thing is with our area, with our expert witnesses, they've got to have VCAT experience that they can manage it under cross-examination, because it's a very lot at stake, and also very, very different because some people aren't good in that environment. So, you know, there's a lot at stake here, and there's a lot of thought that's gone up into where we are and following through, obviously.
Right. So a lot of learning exercise coming out of this one, obviously.
Yes, huge.
Hopefully,
and it's not for faint hearted too. You know, like you like all you can do is you can plan at the start of when you enter into the contract. But again, you know, with unexpected circumstances like this, I say, you know, it just keeps blowing out. So, you know, I think one thing for our listeners is development deals, and you know, while it's great thinking out of box, but you definitely need to plan for the worst.
Well, I think the other thing too, David, is that if you're doing a residential property, yes, you've got to get plans and things like that done. Yep. But even to engage a childcare specialist, who John Moore, who is one of the top childcare specialists in Australia, you know, that was big money to engage him. We had a lot of major expenses before we even got to the settlement period because of the uniqueness of the actual development. Where with a residential property, you wouldn't have those expenses. Mm. It was because of the era of which we were going to, with having all of the reports done, even a demand report that we needed to have as to the viability of us actually doing a childcare in that area. That's what we started off with. So very, very high on what was required for the type of deal that we were doing. So we didn't go in with our eyes closed. We went in with a lot of due diligence and a lot of time spent on would this stack up. And, of course, it has, as long as we conform with everything, which we've certainly done.
Super interesting, I have to say it. But we have to bring you back maybe before, but definitely around March 2020 to find out what happened with this project.
Afterwards, definitely keen to know what's happening.
Yeah. Mm.
Absolutely, and I think you might see a skyrocket go up if we've all got smiles on our face anyway. So that's what we're anticipating and working on, of course.
That's awesome, because this is sort of a joint venture, Jill. There's a money partner, and then there's you, and then there's other people obviously involved in this, right? What are some of the tips you can give to the listeners on asking for a money when they are looking for a joint venture, basically, essentially?
Well, there's a number of things with my clients. What I talk about this with them on a ready basis, because if we look at deals to get in, so many of my clients don't have any money in the deals that they're doing. And they might be doing, I've got a guy in Queensland who this year he will do our projection together on a calendar year will be that he'll do 7 buy, reno, subdivide, sell deals. Not reinventing the wheel with getting out and working on new areas. He's got his area that's all worked out, and he knows his figures, he knows his area expert requirements of what resales would be and expenses, and very much working on how can you go ahead and do it, and where can you find your money partners for something that me as his coach knows that these deals stack up because I know his credibility, but also I'm the devil's advocate that comes in and checks his email, his feasibilities. So when you're looking for money partners, the big thing is that you as the person who is initiating the actual deal itself, you've got to know what you're selling is going to be plausible. You've got to know your figures. why would I want to come with you if you're stumbling and can't get all of the quality pluses out of the deal that you can show me that it's going to stack up? So the first thing is that you've got to be confident with what you're doing. And if you're not confident as an investor, the more that you can get in with learning all of the indicators, what, why you're choosing in that area, what's the potential, you know, projected growth, how many days on the market, who your market is, what sort of fittings are they wanting, the more that you can come over with this sort of insight, the more that you are able to deliver it to the person that you are looking for money partners. So I've got money partners that have come into the childcare centre, for example, and this is very much that I had to show them, was their money going to be safe? There's got to be some sort of personal guarantee, or their money's got to be covered in what they're doing is one part, but the other thing is it's also got to be that your numbers stack up because your name is on the line here. And it all comes down to getting the right team on board that can check your feasibility, that the right people on board, like a good town planner, that can back what you're doing and support what you're doing. Getting agents on board to help you with the right information about the area, and getting out of your comfort zone and just don't do it all from home on the computer, physically get out and start to walk the streets and see comparables and see what market prices are going on, because that's where the real action happens.
But assuming person has got all of that, right, where do they go in the market to actually hunt for these money partners?
Well, I think the big thing is it comes down, if I look back, you know, many years ago, I've got a hearing problem, Jazz, as you know, and I would always sit in the front row of a property workshops or any workshop that I did, because I couldn't hear unless I could see the presenter's, you know, mouth. I would sort of lip read as well as hear. And I would absolutely cringe in the front row, hoping and that I wouldn't be asked a question, because I didn't have self-worth or self-belief in what I was doing. And I had to be there, otherwise it would be a waste of time. So little by little, my way of overcoming that was to be a sponge of everything that came my way, whether it was podcasts, whether it was going to other meetup groups. One of my greatest fears was when I went to a meetup group, how could I go and break into a conversation where two or three other people were talking before the actual meetup group started? How could I ever do that? What would I say? Where would I go? And I'd just cringe, and my comfort zone would keep me there if I allowed it to keep me there. So over time, I learned that if I went and there was a couple of people talking, you know, if I just said, may I join you, that would stop the conversation. And if they said, yes, by all means, come in. And if they include you in the conversation, you're set. If they don't include you, just slip away in a couple of minutes, but don't take it personally.
Yep.
Talk to the person next to you when you sit down. Make sure you don't sit next to someone that you know. Sit next to someone that you don't know and start conversations up with them. And the conversations, keep them simple. Yep. What are you here for specifically tonight? Are you into property? Yep. Where would you like to be in 3 months with property? What's your strategy? And just short questions that start to get motivated with the conversation. Also, those sorts of questions, the listener then starts to think, well, yeah, he sort of knows or she knows what they're talking about. And underneath it all, you might be shivering in your boots, but you will live through it.
That's some good tips over there. The other thing, Jill, is development is a different space altogether. That requires a lot of different skills to be able to put together a deal, right?
Yep.
And there's so many properties that get listed on real estate or whatever other website's domain on a daily basis. What's the best way to filter through these properties quickly without wasting too much time to get a number that looks like the subdivision or the development is possible on this side, and then go a bit more into depth of that particular property that you're looking at?
So I would, if I was meeting someone and I said to them, yes, what's your strategy in property? And they'd say anything. And I'd say, where are you looking? And they say, everywhere. I'd bet my bottom dollar, my last cent, that they, in 12 months' time, will absolutely have nothing on under their belt for a property deal that even looks remotely like coming anywhere near a profit. My big thing is, and I work on this with each of my clients, they must focus in one area to start off with. It is so important that they become an area expert in one area. That area that they're looking at might not be the be-all and end-all of where they end up investing, but they've got to learn the ropes before they start. They've got to learn what the market is. They've got to learn, you know, who the market is. They've got to virtually, if you were down going to subdivide, what would a smaller block of land with an unrenovated house cost? What would a smaller block of land with a renovated house cost? You've got to actually get out and have a look at these properties and find comparables. I find that the biggest thing is that you've got to first of all identify what your strengths are. What are you going to bring to the table in a deal? And for me, I like to go into a deal and more often than not, I haven't got any money in the deal. So what am I bringing to the deal? And all those years ago, I didn't have money. I certainly didn't have property know-how. But this is where I became a sponge to take on as much as I could to learn, and little by little my confidence grew. And I only did this by actioning and getting out of my own comfort zone. But one of the things, guys, that I find is so important is the more that you can become an area expert in one area, and once you know how to refine an area, you can then move on to other areas if you want to. But what I think is, we've talked on our last podcast about personality profiling, because you've got to pick a partner that complements you. I've got a property partner with this particular deal. He's very analytical. He loves the numbers. So do I, but not to the extent that he does. I'm more the gas bag up the front that loves the negotiating, bringing the money partners on board, sourcing, all of that sort of thing. So you've got to sit down with the people that you want to bring on board or you potentially want to bring on board to find out what their strengths are. What are they going to bring to the table? And I had this conversation with one of my clients yesterday, conference call. He's got a good friend who is very much into working 50 hours a week as a carpenter. He knows his trade, but buying into anything that could be have the word investment at the end of it is very, very risky. And obviously he hasn't been to this point prior to our conversation in on how to think differently and how to build a nest egg. And his biggest concern all the way through is, but what happens if a deal goes sour? And the bottom line is you've got to do your homework. You've got to get the help of the team around you that you're bringing in, and that team has to be a workable team for you. But identifying your own strengths you'll bring to the table has to be something that the rest of the team don't have, so that you're not doubling up on jobs. And by doubling up, I want every one of my clients to be able to do a feasibility, for example, and then send me the actual numbers. I don't want to be doing it for them, but I have to know how to do a feasibility, A, for my own purposes, but for theirs. And you need someone else that can double up and check you as the devil's advocate to make sure that, you know, there's holes in something as to move forward or not. So does that answer your question in a roundabout way from a number of points?
It really does. So the most important point here is the team, essentially, which we have discussed as well a lot in the past. It's what's the skills, what are the key skills each of the player brings, and how do you build that core team?
Speaking of feasibility, Joel, I'm just curious. I know, you know, a lot of us, especially not into the development deals, you know, it can be daunting to try to work out like the back of envelope. Like, how do you know? Or like, let's just say, for example, I'm a newbie today looking at a development deal. What's the type of numbers or figures or the KPIs that you'll be looking at for a quick 10-minute back of the envelope calculation?
Well, very quick envelope. If we're in every state, as you know, has their own stamp duty levels. And in Victoria, it's very, very easy. If I was looking for a purchase price of $600,000, just take the end zero off and that'd be $60,000. Basically, halve it would be $30,000 and add a couple of thousand, and probably the stamp duty on a 600,000 property would be worth about $32,000. Now, that's quick for me to work out. I would suggest in any other state that you're doing, Queensland, they've got cheaper stamp duty, but they've got higher council contributions. I'd suggest in whatever state, see if you can work out an equation that is quick for you to work out in your back of the envelope. When I'm working on subdivisions as an overall on a back of the envelope, I would allow roughly 50 to 60,000 for a subdivision as an overview for a simple 1:2 subdivision. And so I've got my purchase price or anticipated, I've got my stamp duty, which is quick, and I've got my subdivision cost. Then when I'm looking at what I want to bring in for the renovation, we're talking about a quick flick deal here. We're not talking about a structural renovation. We're talking about a cosmetic renovation. Yep. And I'm talking about get it in, get it done, back on the market 4 weeks later. And the simple equation that I use here is for every dollar that I spend on a renovation, I need $3 back in the resale. So if I'm spending $20,000 on a renovation, from my area expert homework, I know that that's going to on-sell that property for $60,000 if I've spent $20,000. So that's my simple rule of thumb that I've got to stick with. And I've got a good mate has done a cosmetic renovation that well and truly went over the $1 for $3 back. But when it all came down, walls were moved, a number of walls were moved, a new kitchen was put in. Now, if you're doing a fairly, a renovation in an area that's not high-end, I'd be going to somewhere like Gumtree. And who in your team can refit a kitchen that might be 12 months old or 18 months old into your new place that you just purchased and get it at a song and get it done and put in much cheaper than buying a $5,000 or $6,000 kitchen? You can get your kitchen benches re-spade and the tops of them. There's so many things that you can do. You can paint over tiles these days. You don't have to replace tiles. So it's about fitting within your budget of a dollar spent for $3 back. And when you've got all of those equations and your area expert, you know what it's going to sell for. Yep, makes it pretty easy to work within.
So the key there is basically stamp duty, subdivision cost, and looking at the rule of spending every $1 you want $3 return for cosmetic renovation, not structural at this point. And obviously educate yourself to become an area expert so you know exactly what the property should be, what the actual value is or the intrinsic value is, so you're not overpaying. And then,
You've got your selling price too. You've got your agent's fees that you must. And that, you know, always remember to negotiate with the agent. If they say, a particular amount, and start to negotiate and say, yes, what about if I did it for this? Or if they're going to be selling your property and you want a quick sale, offer them another point something of a percent as an incentive. If you sell it within the next 3 weeks, I'll give you another 0.5% on your commission. Are you interested? Start to negotiate and start to play around with what your offers are, what you're wanting out of it. And this is where I came back before. I want to put in 1% down on a deposit and the balance of 5%. Don't offer them 20%. Just say, I do this all the time. And why do you want 20% sitting in a real estate agent's trust account it's better in your pocket. You're not paying interest in it if it's mezzanine finance that you're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everything is up for negotiation at the end of the day, really. Yeah. And it's just understanding what's going to tick for the vendors. You know, are they looking for long settlement, shorter settlement? You know, if you, and it's all about give and take. That's what I find. You know, if you can tick their boxes, then certainly there's room for you to tick your boxes as well, because at the end of the day, each have to step in the middle, to meet in the middle, really.
And can I just add, you've made a good point there, because people don't get up on a Saturday morning and decide to put their property on the market because they want to have a laugh for the day. They get up on a Saturday morning and decide to put their property on the market because they're in some sort of distress. They need to download. They're getting a divorce. They've got to move interstate. Someone's sick and dying. There's always an emotional attachment 99% of the time as to why people are selling. Now, the more that you can find out the motivation behind the sale, the more that it gives you more clout with the negotiating.
Absolutely. I think that's a golden tip.
Jill,
yes,
you are pretty active in the market and pretty well connected in the property space. What yep. are your thoughts on the property market over the next year or so? Are you seeing it improving? Are you seeing it staying the same?
Well, that's an interesting one, because one of my clients in Queensland, the one that's doing 7 deals this year, he's working up in the Sunshine Coast area, and he sent me an article yesterday saying that, yes, the out of Brisbane areas, the, you wouldn't call them country, but I suppose Sunshine Coast area is certainly within the very much a growth area. And when I look here, it was funny, I was reading over the weekend the same thing in Victoria, that they're predicting that Ballarat and
Bendigo
are two of the main places. It's very, very hard though, David, because only about 3 weeks earlier, I heard a guy presenting us at a workshop actually, and he was showing stats that one of the greatest growth areas is going to be in the greater Geelong area. And yet on Sunday when I was reading this article, it said that that came in as number three. So I think this is very much about getting in and finding out. A very good site is the Heron Todd White site. And I like it, A, because it's got the property clock in it, and you can always see where different areas, because all of my clients are throughout Australia. I've got a lot in Perth and in different states. I want to keep abreast of what's happening. But if you get onto the Heron Todd White site under residential, they have a report that comes out every calendar month, and it gives you a lot of information about what's going on in the market. A, say, in Melbourne, but then it works on the regional areas also and the thinking behind it. So the more that you can get into that sort of patterning of finding out information and making an educated guess, that would be my suggestion.
That's good. Some good tips over there. And any thoughts on the interest rate, where the interest rate is headed? Are we going to see it going up?
I think that's your department. You're the broker, not me.
Jazz, you're trying to
you're
take it easy.
You're the broker. I'm going to put that back on your court, not mine.
I'll give my tips next time. Let me do some research on that. Now, we have discussed that. It's at the moment, it looks like for the next month or so, it's stable, but we might see a cut. Depending upon how the economy goes and the last two cuts that happened, how they filter in. But we may see a cut near November, Melbourne Cup, possibly. That's what the economists are predicting.
It's, you know, there's obviously you take in a lot of governing factors of the wider range of what's happening in Hong Kong at the moment, where the German economy is and things like that. And what's happening with London and all of that's happening with Brexit. And, you know, we are always the flow-on effect of what's happening globally. So we can't have our head in the sand. We've got to be mindful. But at the same stage, things might be tighter, but there's never been a better time to buy property right now. There's a lot of people out there that have got money sitting available to invest from private investors. If you can't get bank lending, and there's a lot of people that are self-employed or coming out of bankruptcy or for whatever reason they can't get money, there's money to be had there and there's good deals to be had there. So, you know, don't be shied off about what the media are telling you. Don't do this and don't do that and putting the fear mongering into you. It's about knowing and having confidence it's going to back what you're going to do and go for it.
Surely. The only thing I'll add to that is maybe looking at deals with a bit shorter time frame rather than 3 to 4 year projects because of the external turbulences. Yep. It's best to look at projects that can be completed in a year and a half rather than going too long term, depending upon what happens with the external factors like trade war and the things that you mentioned.
We're in interesting times, and this time will pass, but make the most of wherever we are, because in any market, you can make money. The only thing is, if you're wanting to buy and utilise, say, the emotions of the person selling through divorce or debt or death or whatever it might be, you can't usually get a good deal. And I advocate to try and buy 20% under market value. Buy wholesale, because that's part of your get out of jail if the market turns and goes the wrong way. Don't pay retail just because the agent's saying, yes, we won't sell for this or we won't sell for that. Come in with a low offer. Come in with something and they can laugh at you. But, yeah, they'll have egg on their face, and there will be people and times who are desperate to sell or want to sell that you as an investor need to be ready and pick up on that one. So, yeah, go for it.
No, some good tips over there. David, anything else that we want to cover? Jill, anything else that you want to add?
No, I think, Jill's covered a lot of things. And for our listeners, look, if they're interested, Jill's previous episodes, episode 13, all the way back in March 25th, talks about JVs and the property coach side of things. So, I think that's definitely worthwhile going back and for a revisit, that's for sure.
All right. Well, I'd love to hear from anyone if they'd like to hear more about what I do with my clients or what I'm, where I am and part of my journey. And so, by all means, give us a call or email me, and have a free chat with me, because that's our starting point. Sometimes the hardest time is picking up the phone and making the first move, but we do live through that too, and I don't bite. Hopefully.
No, I've tried a few times. She doesn't bite at all.
I think there's a few bite marks. That's what's going on.
I've got the kiss.
Just keep on coming back for more, Jay. So there might be something there. I don't know.
Jill, really appreciate coming on the show once again. We will obviously love to have you back on the show, if not earlier, but definitely after your week at hearing, just to find out how did go and what was the experience out of it. We all live and breathe experiences, so it's good to share them. For our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. If you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever app you're using, and let the word spread like fire. Spark your fire.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.